I've been talking a lot this summer about this very important teaching, which is called this-that conditionality. So most of my talks this summer have been around that theme. This being that comes to be with the arising of this that arises. This not being that does not come to be with the cessation of this that ceases. And that's the way we contemplate change and causality. And that's the way the teaching talks about the whole sense of self, because the teaching on anatta is rather difficult to understand, because there is a sense of self that comes up. It's not like there's nothing there, but that sense of self is actually transitory, and it's really a creation from other causes. And so that's what I'm kind of asking you to maybe notice on the retreat, is that with certain kind of memories, that a certain kind of a self arises. So you get a memory of something pleasant happening, and you have a kind of pleasant sense of self. You get a resentful memory, a resentful judgment comes up. You see someone doing something you think is inappropriate, that judging mind, another sense of self comes up. And if you're attendant to that, you begin to see that these are kind of worlds or territories that consciousness becomes involved in. Flavors of mind, maybe. What, I don't know what imagery you like. But if we were to think of like territories of consciousness that this kind of psychological self gets involved in, you could see how, like, if my mind was very critical and judgmental, then I would interpret life from that way, and the sense of self would be looking outwards and saying, well, that's too small, that's too big, that's too loud, that's too soft, shouldn't be this way, it should be another way, why do they do it that way, why don't do it this way? And so that sense of self and other would manifest through that kind of territory, and it's quite believable. It might even be accurate, but it's still a strong sense of me and other, and is a source of suffering. So we want to notice that pattern and try to see what is life before we occupy those territories. So as I was saying, before you create any sense of me being here, what is it like being here? Before there's any thought or judgment, what is it really like being here? And that silence, isn't it? Silence. And then there is this experience, each one of us in a different way. And then some kind of contact, stimulates a sense of self through memory, through seeing something, hearing something you like, you dislike, and the sense of self gets reborn into the world. The world of a territory that exists just in the mind as a concept, as an idea, as a perception. And then the thinking mind just kind of inhabits that. And then something happens, it changes, and another sense of self arises. And we're not trying to get rid of that as much as just to see, well, that's just conditioned phenomena, which arise and cease. And that if we notice how that works, we begin to see that behind it is this silence, this availability, this mindfulness, this awareness. And we begin to appreciate that more than believe in these territories that we dwell in. And the mistake I think most of us make is that we just try to get to another territory. So the territory, someone says, oh, you're too judgmental. So we try to go to the non-judgmental territory. But actually, it's another sense of self. I shouldn't be judgmental. I should be more kind. It's another kind of self arising from guilt, from someone else's suggestion or whatever. So it's not like we're trying to create a perfect personality or a perfect sense of self or kind of do a kind of self-improvement number on us, not like that. But we're looking at mind again as stream of consciousness and beginning to observe stream of consciousness, what kind of dominant energies are there, and making choices so that the energies which begin to be more to the foreground are ones which are wholesome and skillful and lead to liberation. And that's the, what we call practice. It's not just watching your breath in a kind of meditative posture. It's constantly practicing inner vigilance, awakening to the sense of self that gets triggered, and beginning to see this causality, this connection. Just to see, well, it's just because the mind was stimulated in this way that this sense of self has arisen. That's all. There's nothing ultimately wrong or right about it. And to witness to that, then those territories are, first of all, you have more choice. You don't have to go there. You don't have to choose that. And then you can also make choices which are not based on ego, not based on reaction, but based on just right intention and right effort. So the, as I was saying yesterday, I want to talk about the Brahmaviharas. And when we cultivate the Brahmaviharas, the ways of the heart, what we're doing is we're just stimulating our capacity to abide and perceive life in a particular way. Like I can perceive life in a very critical way, and that can be without ego, and that can be without aversion, without fear, without delusion. I can just see that the clock is not working, there's no battery, I don't need a battery, put a battery in. It's working. And that would be just using the normal critical function. Or I could look at that, well, what a cheap watch, and they just don't make things like they used to, and just go off in some kind of ridiculous aversion type way. And that would be a sense of self arising within the critical mind. So there's nothing wrong with the critical mind, and we need it, and it's helpful. But the critical mind, which is becomes just a kind of a position that we take in life, conceit, I am better than you, you are better than me, and that kind of stuff, is a kind of very awful place to live. So contemplate how much of your life have you lived in the territory of self-disparagement, of self-criticism. Is that been a territory that consciousness has occupied for many hours in your life? Probably has. It has in my life. And you think about, what a joyless way to live life. Why do I do that? It's just bad habit, ignorance, not seeing clearly. So noticing that, like, is there a sense of just appreciation of the way things are, or is there a criticism of the way things are? Is there a sense of inclusion to the way things are? Is there always like a need to say, well, that's better and that's worse, and this should be like that? What's the mind doing? Awakening to that. And then the Brahmaviharas are the ways of including everything. You know, they're the ways of the heart, which is not pushing away, not excluding. So goodwill as a, what we call metta bhavana, it's usually done dualistically. So I think of Atulo, who just rang this morning, he wishes you well. He's doing well in Thailand. He's loving the Buddhist atmosphere. So I could think of Venerable Atulo, may you be well, may you get enlightened, may you come back. I can think in that way, and that can connect me to a territory of empathy, right? Or I can think of my teacher, Ajahn Sumedho. I just got an email from someone organizing something for me with him, and that makes me very happy. I think, Lompo, may you be well. I hope sort of gratitude to him and great affection for him. So that brings me into territory of affection and gratitude. And then maybe I think of my potter friend and his beautiful pots and his creativity and his sort of lovely mind, and I think, oh, good on you. You've got a good practice and you create beautiful things. And that brings me into the territory of appreciation. Appreciate. Oh, yeah. And then maybe I think of someone who is going through a terminal cancer, good friend. And I think, wow, that must be difficult. That would be difficult. I hope you get through this with a clear mind. That brings me into the territory of compassion. And I think, but all beings are the owners of the karma. With birth there is death. With birth there is old sickness and death. There's old age, sickness and death. I contemplate that way. Yeah, life is that way. There is sickness. It happens. There is death. It happens. And that brings me to the territory of equanimity. And these are the kind of spaces that consciousness can abide with, abide in. And they're very much the foundation of liberation. They're the heart qualities which lead away from egotism and selfishness and self-disparagement and stinginess and meanness and fear and anxiety and all the rest of that baggage that we suffer from. So if we look at like then the stream of consciousness rather than duality, me, Lomposamiro, me, Atalo, we just look at what happens when we actually do a practice like that. We use an image of a person and we inhabit that territory, then the mind begins to be, begins to incline in that way because it's doing it. You know, it's just doing that. And like the example I always, you've probably heard me many times talk about this, but we were doing a roof in the Vihara in Northumberland, and I'd never done a roof before. We were using slates, and so I spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours slating this roof. And then I'd go into Newcastle to do some teaching, and then of course what I perceived was roofs, because that's what I was doing. So I said, oh, look at that roof and look at that roof. Oh, and my mind was, because my mind was involved with roofs, the stream of consciousness was weighted towards that direction. It's natural, isn't it? Just natural. So if we do some kind of deliberate practices of metta bhavana or gratitude or something like that, then just the doing of that begins to make stream of consciousness weighted in that direction, which is wholesome. And you can see if the weight of my mind tends to fall in almost like gravity into territories of anxiety and fear, into territories of self-disparagement, into territories of endless judging of myself or judging of others. And I see that and I see, wow, my mind just is like gravity, I just fall into that. You see, well, what would help that would be some kind of balancing, some kind of emphasis on something else. And I'd have to maybe do that deliberately. So then maybe I'm at work or in family or in monastery and I find that I'm almost critical of someone. You know, every time I see them, just critical of them all the time. And actually, they're a bad person. It's just that that's what my mind does. And then I see that, and oh gosh, you're too critical. You're just too critical. You shouldn't be so critical. But that's still criticism, isn't it? It's the same. It's the same bias. It's the same bias towards aversion. So that, and this is the sort of tragedy of the critical mind, that it just turns back on oneself and becomes a kind of inner tyranny. So I see that with this as condition that arises. So then I begin to notice, I see, well, when this person comes into my life, the mind goes to criticism. That conditioning. That's how it works. Yeah? Well, this is conditioning. So rather than take it personally, I shouldn't be that way. First of all, I see the causal nature of it. Oh, yeah, okay. And then I make some intentions. I say, okay, I'm going to be aware of that trigger in me. Be aware of that very critical mind, and then see, can I, in mid-flight, change a perception? And that's a neat challenge. And rather than just hate myself, which is the same bias, I say to myself, well, this is practice. I can do this. Maybe I do it deliberately. in a quiet moment. I said, I bring that person to consciousness and maybe well, maybe free from suffering. I look at other aspects. I look at this, you know, at their pain, or I look at their difficulty or their difficult karma, whatever it is. And then when they come into my consciousness, either through memory or through sight or through hearing, whatever, then maybe the first reaction is critical. But now I'm training with this now, and I see that, and I shift my perception. Yeah, and may I be free from suffering, and may I be free from suffering. And that's a switch in perception, and that's a practice we can do. And that's different than just kind of criticizing yourself or saying you shouldn't feel judgmental or angry or whatever. Anxiety and fear, same way. You start to, mind starts to shift in that way. How can I change my perception? Maybe I say, well, all beings who have this kind of a problem face anxiety and fear. I open my mind. Oh, this is the human condition. I open my mind to a different possibility. And this is the use of perceptions, that we can use perceptions in skillful ways, or we can be drowned and driven and oppressed by habitual egotistical perceptions, which are they seem so real, but that's all they are, they're just interpretations. So as the heart like has this sense of empathy and open-heartedness and so on, it then responds to the body, to the defilements that you have in meditation or whatever. It responds from that way of including. Including and working with. So when I find, say, if someone finds you're very judgmental towards someone, you're still including that. You're not saying that's not right. No. You might say it's unskillful to pursue that. Yeah, but you say it's all right. It just feels that way. But is that the way I want to live my life? It takes something like cynicism. I don't know about you, but I suffered a lot from the conceit of cynicism as a college student. And it gave me some kind of a false security. But it was a horrible way to live my life, kind of constantly being cynical about this, that, and the other. Not a nice territory to live in. So then, like, trying to evolve away from that was quite difficult because it was such a pernicious habit. Just would come up and, you know, cynical take on anything that I wanted to be cynical about. Very egotistical and very arrogant. And yet, it could sound quite... to me, quite clever. To others, probably not. and then it's beginning to, oh yeah, with this condition that arises, begin to first notice, ah, this, that conditioning, and then make a choice. That's not the direction. You include it. This is the way it is now, but that's not the direction. And you start to shift intentions, perceptions, practice in a different direction. So if the habit, say for me, the habit of cynicism was very, very strong, and probably it was the way that I protected myself from my own inadequacies and fears, you know, a sense of fear that I had, shyness or whatever, kind of compensation. But having indulged in that, the mind still had that momentum. You know, it still tended to flow. Gravity tended to take it towards that. So to train out of it was a constant like lifting away from that. Lifting away from it, but not denying it, not being just self-judgment and self-critical, because that's not really opening the mind with compassion. It's just more aversion. So if you see what the pattern is, you're constantly using intelligence, not just opinion. You're constantly using intelligence to see this, that conditioning. You're seeing the process of the momentums in consciousness. You're constantly noticing, oh yeah, the gravity of karma takes me to those territories. Now how could I not just be sucked into that gravity, that vortex? What practice could I do? So it's quite intelligent. It's not simply a kind of idealized judgment about what you should be, or just believing in some kind of Buddhist naive concept of goodness. You know, it's much more sophisticated than that. And so that use of intelligence and wisdom and discernment, you say, oh yeah, okay, I understand how it works. If you understand how it works, then okay, you understand how to train the mind. Contrast that to just this, kind of knee-jerk reaction that you should be some different way. That's not intelligent. That's habit. Having no sense of self-perspective, having no sense of self-inquiry, having no sense of humility, I suppose, is another disaster. But usually those people aren't here. They don't come into situations which require humility. So the arrogant person is even worse off. And I sometimes wonder why so many Buddhist practitioners are like deeply into self-disparagement. Well, maybe because we are actually quite sincere. You know, maybe we really do have a kind of sincere longing for peace, and we realize these things which block peace, and we get frustrated by that, and hence we become self-critical. Maybe, I don't know. But it does require a kind of honesty and humility, doesn't it, to take on what's happening in consciousness. And if one is then using stream of consciousness rather than social situation, if you're looking at that, then you see whatever the social situation is the quality of mind wholesome or unwholesome? Is it something that leads to the happiness of myself and others, or is it something that leads to the detriment and suffering of myself and others? Irrespective. So I might be like self-righteousness. I might be right, but I might be very conceited in my rightness and, you know, kind of get on my high horse and say it shouldn't be this way. Yeah, maybe. So one, I could address a social issue, but I also have to address my heart. And address my heart and say, well, actually, if I keep going that way, is that going to be to my welfare and to the welfare of others? Is that towards the end of suffering, as an increased suffering? So it's a very intelligent looking at cause and effect, but it's not a kind of self-indulgent analysis. Why am I like this? I shouldn't be like that. It's very immediate. It's a very immediate looking, rather than kind of going into some long, long history. That sometimes can be helpful, but it's very, very immediate. Ah, this with this, there is that. You just begin to watch. Ah, yeah, with that kind of trigger, this kind of mindset arises. Is it skillful? Is it unskillful? So it's a very immediate practice. Sometimes I think we in the West, we overanalyze. You know, we kind of, why am I this way? Why am I getting? And it's another kind of self view that goes into it. But no, we just see stream of consciousness. Now this is unskillful. How can I train around that? This is skillful. How can I enhance that and make that stronger? It's very immediate that way. So let's do some metta bhavana. Stretch your legs a bit and I'll give some instruction. If you get sleepy, feel free to stand up. Stand up quietly. Change the posture, that's a good one. As we meditate, then discomfort arises. You know, realize discomfort will produce aversion. And so, like the capacity to be with discomfort, not be averse to it, is a lesson around the Brahmaviharas. So something that you investigate as discomfort arises. Okay. Always the first principle, awakening, the awakened mind, using sound then. Listen to the way things are. And then make the listening relaxed, receptive, rather than searching for something. You're just allowing the situation to be as it is, and you're accepting it. But you are attentive. You are making an intention to listen. So there's both an openness and a brightness to that. Listen to sound, feel your hands. And feel the whole body. Non-becoming, non-anticipation, just the way it is. So you need to be attentive, but not seeking anything. So you're watchful, available. And this is the foundation. Keep returning to this insight, because it's both an experience and an insight. It's an understanding. This is your home ground. Feel the breathing of the body. Inflate the breath a bit so you get into the body if you're into a lot of thinking. Exaggerate the breath a bit, get into the body. Especially if you're moving towards sleepiness. Don't be lazy. Sustain more vitality. In the posture, keeping the vitality in the posture as well. Open chest, high, tall posture, very helpful indeed. Hara forward, nice and tall. Because any practice needs vitality, so whether it's metta or anapanasati, if you don't have the vitality, then the mind drifts into the territories of porridge and oatmeal and mind-coagulated thought. Bring your attention to the chest. Feel the rising, falling of the chest with the breath. Expand the breath a bit, feel the chest rising, feel it falling. Now, does your energy want to go into thought, into the head? Can it stay down in the heart, in the chest? Make that a stronger intention than to be with the chest. Clear intention. So feel the rising, falling at the chest. And again, during this practice, if you do go up into the head and thinking, and the posture starts to collapse, then use the expanded breath. Welcome the in-breath. Let go of the out-breath. Staying with the breathing at the chest, imagine, name a friend, or someone you love, someone who, when you imagine, think their name, it's easy to feel kindness, affection. So bring that image to consciousness by naming them, visualizing them. But don't go into a story about them, just the sense of who they are in relation to you. And on the in-breath, name them, visualize them, just using the name. Take the whole name, extend it for the whole in-breath. So if I think of Lompo Sumedho, on the in-breath, Lompo, and the out-breath, may you be well. So the image and the in-breath connects me to a feeling of affection and kindness, and the out-breath reinforces that, may you be well. So there's several elements there. There's the breath, which calms. There's the body centering at the heart, which stimulates that chakra. There's the imagery, which connects you to the sense of gratitude, kindness, and then that practices then to sustain those elements. So it's both calming and moving to the territory of kindness. So any way you can open the heart, it might be through just the joyous appreciation of someone, it might be gratitude for someone that has been inspiring to you. Might be just the pure loving affection of someone close to you. It might be compassion for their difficulties. And then try to, once you have that connection, keep it very simple. Don't think about them in a narrative way. Just the name, Lompo, may you be well. Paul, may you be well. Then change the image. So when you change the image, it's like the refresh button on the computer. You gotta remember what you're doing again. So bring up another person. It can be a person, it can be a pet, it doesn't matter. Then name the person, and then use all these elements. The long breath in, welcoming with the name. So Atlo and the in-breath. A breath, may you be well. Atlo, may you be well. So the breath, the chest, the image, the kindness, the affection. And you keep stimulating that. So pick up another person. Then you can expand this. So take all of us in this room. Imagine everyone on this retreat, our friends in the kitchen. So all of us here, use imagination, expand that sense of kindness and affection. Bring that image into your heart. May we all be well. So there's a sense of expansion now. You feel that? Feel that in the body, feel that in the heart, feel that as a perception. All of us here on this retreat. Breath, including everyone, may we be well. Now include yourself, bring out some sense of your own predicament in life, your own body, your own sort of emotional life, social life, some kind of imagining of yourself. And then as you breathe in, may I be well. As you breathe out, may I be free. So it's including everything in your own life. It's okay. Acceptance and kindness. Breathing in, may I be well. Breathing out, may I be free. So then go through those four, move from the two people, the group, yourself, and notice how when you move to another image that kind of reminds you, refreshes the mind, and so it kind of heightens it again. And then spend as long as it works on each person. Experiment. And then if you want, once you've established this sort of open heart, then just let go of the imagery and just breathe in the sense of at the heart with welcoming, letting go. So the attitude of metta then informs your mindfulness and effort. So as you're doing this, of course, the TV screen flips on and you're in some kind of storyline. Just keep seeing the connection, some kind of memory, idea, and bang, there's the birth of self. And just notice those connections and then see that that knowing is not that, it's just TV screen. And then make this huge investment in the present moment, totally dedicated to this situation now, this practice now. So no elements from the past. And no kind of attempt to get anything from this. No movement towards the future. You're not like manufacturing some kind of exquisite, beautiful sense of compassion. If it arises, fine. Just the intention. Just the intention. So it's not a selfish act. It's an act of generosity, of giving this time to these beings. And let the result be what it is. Sometimes you'll find this kind of just like resistance to doing meditation. Like just a resistance to be here, not wanting to do this. Maybe it's not so overt in terms of narratives. And just like the intention, just to totally be with this can illuminate that sense of resistance, not wanting to hold the body up, not wanting to be here, wanting to be somewhere else. Just a kind of underlying resistance. And then just this kind of intention to totally give myself to this now highlights that resistance if it's there. And you can just see that more clearly. And then vice versa, anticipation. The kind of thinking that I'll get a result from this. I'm trying to create or manufacture a result. It's an anticipation. And noticing that. So it's like all elements from the past. Let go. All projections to the future, let go. And it's just total present practice. So do some walking practice. You go outside and you feel the light. There's someone playing a trumpet, man. He's great. I was watching them. I'm sitting here. And in my joking mind, you know, with this, that, I look at this, that conditioning all the time. So sitting here, honk. Oh, there she goes with the trumpet.
Reveille.
There she is. I was just talking about you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's just...
It all came out. Oh, my God.
But I just, you know, have this kind of jokey mind. I'm just watching. Not, don't go there, Rita.
And then I thought I'd do everybody a favor by leaving the door because I could see everybody falling asleep.
Yeah.
Aren't we a great old bunch of oldies and goldies? Anyway, so you go outside and look at the sky, look at the color, and look at how the mind appreciates. You know, it appreciates like light, fresh air, clarity, color, space, sky, and that's mudita. That's how I see mudita, the heart quality of appreciation. And you can't do that if you're just worried about yourself. You think, oh gosh, my meditation isn't working. Gosh, I've got this nose problem. I don't know what I'm going to do. So to actually appreciate, to practice or notice mudita, you have to listen, look, be quiet. And it's very natural, isn't it? When we go out, we really feel that. Appreciation. So, and then if you do walking meditation, then, and the mind starts to get convoluted again into its self narratives, and stop, and just open, sky. It's this way now. So use mudita, use appreciation, use that beautiful human quality of appreciating beauty. Use that to awaken the mind. Because the thing about natural beauty is you can't really own it. Like consumer beauty, you know, you try to own it and you can get greedy, not necessarily, but natural beauty just has this very good influence on the mind. And hold the mind in that sense of appreciation and then return to the walking path, right, with that openness. And then the mind will get caught up again and stop and awaken. Oh, yeah, the sky, look at the sky, space. And you know what? But try not to make a commentary about it. Oh, it's just lovely. No, you're okay, shut up. it's just this way. So actually, because when you say it's lovely, it's no longer lovely. That's just thought. So come to like the purity of appreciation, the purity of silence and sky, night sky, blue sky, the clarity of the light, the apple tree, the deer, whatever. So you come, oh yeah. And then hold the mind in silence in that appreciation. Yeah. And that's not constructed, is it? You're not creating that. That's a kind of natural possibility. So that way, when you're doing walking meditation, you can break up the congealed nature of thought and worry and all that business of being caught up in self-views. And then notice the space between, the point between the television shows, you know, the space between just the sky. And you just learn to listen, and you what you do is again you're gravitating towards that space, to that openness, rather than the whole self-analysis and self-referencing thoughts that we get so caught up into.